From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The National Women's Hall of Fame is getting ready to posthumously induct six black women of great achievement, including the voice you're hearing right there, singer Aretha Franklin. The list also includes the suffragist Mary Church Terrell, nurse Barbara Hillary, librarian Barbara Rose Johns Powell, medical research revolutionizer Henrietta Lacks, and author Toni Morrison. And really, there are so many connections to make this hour. I'm going to tell you about one of them in context of some of the events we're seeing across the country right now. When you think about a COVID vaccine, and when you think about the efforts already underway to make sure that the African-American community is on board with this vaccine, if you don't know the history in this country, you might be confused about why anybody would say, not us. Well, think about this. January 29th, 1951, a woman named Henrietta Lacks, 31 years old, went to Johns Hopkins Hospital. It was the only hospital in her region that treated black patients at the time. Henrietta had felt what she described as a knot in her womb. Her cousins had guessed that she was pregnant, and they were right, but it wasn't as simple as that. After giving birth, Henrietta suffered a severe hemorrhage. She would be diagnosed with cervical cancer. You might know the name Henrietta Lacks because what happened next would change the course of medicine, but it was also controversial. During her treatments, doctors took samples from Henrietta's cervix without her permission or her knowledge. One of the samples contained a healthy tissue. The other sample contained cancerous tissue. A researcher at Johns Hopkins used those samples to create the HeLa immortal cell line, HeLa, H-E-L-A, taken from the name Henrietta Lacks, the HeLa immortal cell line. It was a massive scientific breakthrough. Previously, cells cultured from other human cells would only survive for a few days at most. These cells behave differently, and they open up all kinds of possibility for medical science. They've been used again and again. But the Lacks family had no idea, not at the time. They weren't told. They certainly weren't compensated. And when they were finally given some information decades later, they had questions. But those questions were largely ignored. Meanwhile, yes, the HeLa cells are used today and have been parts of the kinds of groundbreaking research that saves lives. So with the new vaccine on the way, this is just one example of why the African-American community might not trust medical science. Now, the hope is, of course, that everyone has learned lessons, that communication, transparency, respect, and equality is going to be in play here. But you have to understand the history. And the National Women's Hall of Fame wants to salute and honor the life of Henrietta Lacks and five other women. And I want to bring in some of the people involved with making sure we understand all six of these names, their lives and legacies, and more. In a moment, we're going to be joined by the granddaughter of Henrietta Lacks. But before then, let me welcome Natalie Rudd, Program Coordinator for the National Women's Hall of Fame. Natalie, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Good to be with you today. Thanks for having us.
And Allison Parker, a biographer of Mary Church Terrell. Allison, welcome. Thanks for making time for us.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Well, there's a lot to talk about with these six women. So let me just start with you, Natalie. Tell us what's happening with the National Women's Hall of Fame, not just with the idea to do this, but what you want the public to know about how they can sort of be part of it and check out some of the proceedings.
Yeah, absolutely. So we just started a brand new program that we are calling the Virtual Induction Series. In the year 2020, when things are so unprecedented and crazy, the National Women's Hall of Fame wanted to use this otherwise tumultuous year to innovate the ways that we operate and reflect on our past. So to do that, we are beginning this new series of virtual inductions. So they are accessible to anybody everywhere across the country, across the world even, where we will honor women posthumously that were deceased prior to the establishment of the National Women's Hall of Fame, overlooked in their lifetime, and or passed away before they were able to be inducted. So our first inaugural virtual induction is actually this evening. It's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's free to the public, so anybody and everybody can join. And you'll be able to view the video afterwards, even if you aren't available tonight, where you can learn about all six of these amazing women that we're inducting.
All right, 7:30 tonight, a free event. Yeah. Of course, I know your organization tells the public, we're going to do this for free. If you want to make donations to support the organization, that's great. But tonight, 7:30, yeah. How do people see it?
Yeah, to go onto our website, it's probably the most easy. You're just going to go to womenofthehall.org. That is womenofthehall.org. And from our main page, you can find our registration page.
We're going to start with the story of Mary Church Terrell, who was born in 1863 and lived a long life and the kind of career and work that, frankly, I think a lot of listeners, this might be one of the names on the list that you go, well, I know Aretha Franklin, I might know Henrietta Lacks, I don't know if I know Mary Church Terrell. And let me ask Allison Parker, is that what you find?
Yes, although it is improving, because with the 100th centennial of the women's right to vote, there's been some attention to her as a black suffragist. She was involved in fighting for black women's right to vote, but she also always, and so did all black women who were suffragists, also fought against the disenfranchisement of black men who had won the right to vote with the 14th Amendment, but soon found that that right was eroded through things like the grandfather clause and poll taxes and other ways like that. So it was a two-fronted fight for them.
Allison, in a moment, I just want you to kind of paint sort of the shortened biography for our listeners. But before then, just a point of fact here. I'm seeing in different sources that Mary Church Terrell was either the very first or one of the first black women to earn a college degree. Do we know which?
Oh, she was not the first, but she was one of the first. And this was in 1884. She graduated from Oberlin College. And Oberlin had innovated, starting in the 1830s, by allowing women and blacks to go to a predominantly white college. What was interesting about her choice is, and this was very unusual for all women at the time, is she chose to take the so-called gentleman's course, which meant that she would do a 4-year bachelor's degree instead of the ladies course, which white women took as well. And that would have been more like an associate of arts degree, where they would end up doing something like teaching. So she was a rebel on gender and race issues at the time.
Yeah. Here in Rochester, when you talk to such trailblazers, people like Ruth Scott and others, I mean, they'll tell you that even in the 1950s, not the late 1800s, but in the 1950s or the 1960s, when black women went to college, they were often told, well, if you want a career, you're going to have to be a teacher, but you're going to have to be an elementary teacher because white people probably don't want black people teaching their kids who are older. I mean, it was a very, very narrow scope of career options, even in the 1950s, close to 100 years after the birth of Mary Church Terrell. And here she was taking the gentleman's course in, what, the 1880s. So tell me about her work and career and what happened next.
Well, just to start off with, she was born in Memphis, Tennessee in 1863. And she was technically enslaved because even though the Emancipation Proclamation had just happened with Lincoln, the truth is that she was in an area of Tennessee that had been occupied by Union troops. And as long as the whites said that they were loyal to the Union, they got to keep their slaves. And so she was not freed until the end of the Civil War when she was a toddler. But her parents both were enslaved by their owners, who were their fathers. So she was biracial, although, of course, that was not the way it was seen. It was seen that she was black. But her parents were able to use some of their connections to start businesses early in the period of Reconstruction. And so she was able to gain an education. And not only did she take the gentleman's course, but she focused on languages. And she ended up being fluent in German, French, Italian, and then she taught Latin and Greek, which was definitely a male-dominated field. And people told her, if this is what you decide to do, you'll never get married. And she said, well, I'm just going to take a chance because I love language. And she ended up going to Washington, D.C. to teach in the most prominent black school, public school of the time, which was called the M Street Colored School. And the head of the Latin department was Robert Terrell, a formerly enslaved man who was one of the first to graduate from Harvard University. And he was not intimidated by her level of education. And so they ended up getting married.
At some point, we're going to tell stories of women who didn't have to deal with men who might be intimidated by levels of education. I guess not quite yet, Allison Parker.
I would like that.
My God. Okay, and so, you know, I don't want you to ask you to condense too much, but, you know, your time is limited to our first half hour here. So can you take us through more of the highlights of Mary Church Terrell's life?
Yes, I think if anybody knows about her other than the fact that she was a major suffragist, I think it's the fact that she was the first president of the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs, which was founded in 1896. In part, it was founded because Black women were not invited to be part of white women's clubs on for any number of issues, whether it was, you know, temperance, any other kind of reform, they just weren't invited to be part of it. So they needed to set up their own organizations. And then on top of that, they had some separate specific issues about fighting against lynching, fighting against segregation, fighting, you know, against the kind of discrimination that was specific to them as Black women who were maligned, and their sexuality was maligned. The stereotypes against Black women as somehow being overly sexual, and then also against Black men as supposedly being rapists, which of course, you know, would then lead to an allowance supposedly for something like lynching. So they really felt like they had to take this on and specifically counter all of these negative stereotypes that were in the popular culture. So they did that. And her role as the first president really points to the fact that she had gained so much respect within the Black community that she would be elected to take that job on. And then within a couple of a decade later, she ended up helping to co-found the NAACP with people like Ida B. Wells and W.B. Du Bois. So she was quite a political activist, and that was just the beginning of her career as an activist. And she continued through a whole series of reforms all the way through to 1954. So she died the same year and right after Brown v. Board was decided. But during that last decade of her life, she was still participating in protests in Washington, D.C. over segregation, and actually managed to win both in court in a Supreme Court case, and she won in terms of the boycotts and the picketing that was done to force businesses to start serving Blacks equally to whites.
Yeah. Let our listeners know the name of the biography you wrote of Mary Church Terrell, Allison.
Yes, it's called Unceasing Militant, The Life of Mary Church Terrell.
I think it's such a name, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that the name is both a kind of a nod to her incredibly long life of many, many decades of work, but it also comes from a eulogy that was given to her by Paul Robeson. And he basically called her an unceasing militant for the civil rights of all. And so in that context, I think that that's a quite accurate. Also, he was affiliated with the Communist Party. And one of the things that my biography does is shows that, in fact, she was very active in a whole range of causes and was comfortable working with left-leaning and communist organizations as long as they were taking on issues that mattered to her. And at a time when sometimes some of the organizations, including the NAACP, were sometimes timid to get involved in certain cases, like the Scottsboro Nine case, where nine young boys in Alabama were accused of a gang rape. And that was kind of a toxic subject, and a lot of people wanted to avoid it. But she was willing to work with the Communist Party, the Legal Defense Fund, to try to help free them from jail and from their death sentence.
Yeah, that's why I think the name of this book, Unceasing Militant, The Life of Mary Church Terrell, is so fitting, because when you read this biography of this woman who lived into her 90s and never stopped the work. Some of the picketing that our guest was just talking about, picketing, whether it was segregated theaters or restaurants, that was in her 80s that she was participating on picket lines. She was still in her 70s and 80s persuading, as you say, the local chapter of the American Association of University Women to admit black members. How did she do that so successfully for so long? Was there, you know, did she speak or write about her approach to achieving justice through various means, Allison?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's interesting about her is that she never gave up, but she was also absolutely determined to work with anybody and everybody. So she went to multiple meetings a day and would be active in causes with groups that would really sometimes not be in the same room together. But she was more concerned with the end goal. And if sometimes she had to talk with, you know, somewhat prejudiced white suffragists to get them to understand that black women had a specific set of concerns around voting rights, which included, you know, we want to make sure that even if we get the right to vote, we can actually vote if we're living in the South, things like that. She was willing to have those conversations with people who were much more either conservative or hostile to her, even as she was also willing to go out on a limb and work with groups that were kind of less popular, more marginalized, like the Communist Party, you know, in America. So that's one part of it. The other thing is that she spoke and wrote all of her life, and her speeches were very, very popular. And she had a commanding presence and a very deep voice. And she was incredibly elegant and quite beautiful. And she was somebody who attracted a lot of attention. This is in an era before TV, before the internet. People went to hear talks as a form of entertainment. And so that's something that she was able to provide. But her topic was always about civil rights, women's rights, the rights of African Americans.
And finally, as you mentioned, she passed away 2 months after Brown v. Board. Do we know what that meant to her?
Yes, there's a wonderful photograph of her admiring the headlines. And she basically said, I'm gratified that I was able to live long enough to see the goals that I had worked for all those decades start to be realized. And she was an optimist. And I think one of the things that she can tell a current generation is that you shouldn't give up. You need to continue to work, but that you also need to recognize that activism is a process and that it's long and that you have to keep on with it. I think sometimes people have, you know, when they say inaccurately that Rosa Parks, that her main contribution was that she just sat down, you know, on the bus and was tired and wouldn't get up. Many of us now know that, in fact, she was an NAACP activist and had worked for decades on the cause and was part of a larger coalition and decided to sit down that day. But it was part of a bigger struggle. And so that is exactly what Mary Church Terrell was like as well.
Well, I want to thank you for telling the story, both in the book and here on the program, Allison. I know time is limited, but thank you for making time for the program. And the book, by the way, is called Unceasing Militant, The Life of Mary Church Terrell, who is one of six black women posthumously honored by the National Women's Hall of Fame. Sounds like an awesome book to put right on the list for end-of-year reading here, and we're going to be talking more about the books of the year coming up here on this program in the weeks to come, so you might want to add that to the list. Allison, thank you. Really appreciate the conversation with you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Take care.
That's bye-bye. Allison Parker and Natalie Rudd, Program Coordinator for the National Women's Hall of Fame. Before we move to some of the other people on the list, we're going to welcome the granddaughter of Henrietta Lacks in just a moment. What does the name Mary Church Terrell mean to you, Natalie?
Oh, for me, I think it's just kind of looking back at our history. Here at the National Women's Hall of Fame, we were founded in Seneca Falls, which is where the first Women's Rights Convention was held. And so we are dedicated to uplifting all women and sharing the stories of women throughout our history who have shaped our nation. And I think that Mary Church Terrell was obviously, as Allison just said, extremely formidable in the foundation of our country today. And I think it's one of those stories that maybe has gotten lost throughout history. And I'm really excited that we're able to retell her story, especially in the 100th year anniversary of the 19th Amendment.
talking to Natalie Rudd from the National Women's Hall of Fame, and their event is tonight, 7:30. Go to the National Women's Hall of Fame website, and it's easy to find it. It is free. And the ceremony tonight, if you miss it, they will have the video for you to check it out. They're going virtual in these unprecedented times. And I want to bring in now the granddaughter of Henrietta Lacks, who is one of the six women being honored by the National Women's Hall of Fame. Jerry Lacks is with us now. Jerry, thanks for making time for the program. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let me ask Natalie a little bit about Henrietta Lacks and what this name maybe means to the Women's Hall of Fame, and frankly, a name that up until recent decades, most people would not have known, and now this is a massively important name in understanding justice, equality, medical science, medical achievement. I mean, there's so many layers to the life of Henrietta Lacks. Tell us about it from your perspective, Natalie.
Yeah, so at the National Women's Hall of Fame, we not only celebrate women who have helped for women's rights, like Mary Church Terrell, who was a suffragist, but we also want to celebrate all women of achievement who are specialized in their fields. And Henrietta Lacks, I think, is a really, really special inductee because her life story begins a huge conversation about medical ethics, particularly the morality of using somebody else's cells without their consent. And I think that this is a really big conversation that her life has brought to the surface. And we're really excited to tell that story and show that here at the Hall, we want to show all stories, even those that maybe were forgotten for a little bit, especially like somebody like Henrietta Lacks, where 20, 30 years went by where nobody knew or her family didn't know, as Jerry will tell you, that her cells are being used to create these amazing medicines. So we want to share her story and really give her the honor that she deserves and that her family deserves because her legacy was forgotten for so long.
The story of Henrietta Lacks has been told by a book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. Oprah Winfrey was so moved that Oprah wanted to be part of an HBO movie telling the story of Henrietta Lacks and family. And if you missed the introduction, I'll just briefly encapsulate it. Then I'm sure Jerry will correct me if I'm wrong on any of the details. But Henrietta was just 31 years old when she passed away. She was feeling pain, which she described as a knot in her abdomen. She goes to Johns Hopkins in 1951, the only hospital in her region that will treat black people. And she was pregnant. After the delivery of a child, she had a massive hemorrhage. She later was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And what she did not know was that the medical team had taken some cells that for so long the medical science community had a hard time working with cells outside of the human body. But these cancerous cells taken from Henrietta Lacks were the first recorded example of cells that would divide multiple times without dying. That's why they got the name the immortal cells. That HeLa line of cells became just titanically important to medical science. I mean, look at the list of contributions of what it was involved with. Everything from a polio vaccine, chemotherapy, Parkinson's research, and more. Mm-hmm. It's been involved in more than 76,000 studies. The list goes on. But the family didn't know about this. Henrietta didn't know about this. And decades later, when the family finds out, they had questions. The medical community doesn't really want to provide answers, let alone, by the way, compensate the family in any way for this incredibly important set of medical achievements that began with Henrietta Lacks. And so it's a story of medical achievement, but it's also about communication, transparency, fairness, justice. And Jerry Lacks, how do you see the broader story of what your grandmother means, not only to medical science, but some of the questions about transparency and fairness?
Let me see. Our family uses our grandmother's story as a platform to, speak and take actions about health disparity, social justice. We even speak about the medical mistrust that the community have with the medical institutions. And Henrietta's story is just like you just said, is like many layers of her story that touches so many communities worldwide. And we just want to just like you say, just be transparent, just to try to, understand what is going on within each individual community and try to tackle, you know, what's the problem, what's the issue, find out what their beliefs are, what their concerns are. And that's what our family is trying to do, just make sure when we go out and we speak and we talk about our grandmother's story, we just make sure that we let people know, you know, we can say things, but in order for us to say things, we have to back it up with actions. So we just, just make sure that we just speak and move when we talk about our grandmother's story, and just try to, you know, just use her story to kind of move forward in a positive way. We just have to make sure that we acknowledge what has happened in the past so we can actually move forward and do better, so things that happened in the past won't repeat itself, which it has done on many occasions with our family. I mean, on multiple occasions, as you mentioned before, the family didn't know about our grandmother's, I call it magical cells, when they were taken in 1951 until 20 to 25 years later. Then probably like a couple of decades later, they came to Henrietta's children to withdraw blood from Henrietta's children, not being, upfront and letting them know what they were doing or what they needed these samples for. And they were used in medical research, which they did not know. Then in 2013, the Henrietta's or the Gila genome was published publicly without the family's knowledge or permission. So we were thrown into this medical arena of mistrust again. The story was out there about, you know, the family's concern of the consent of privacy, and yet in 2013, you go and do the same thing that happened in 1951 and 1976. But this time, you know, it was more of a transparency. They actually sat down and listened to the Lax family's concern and what we wanted to do and how we wanted to move forward.
Do you now, Jerry, can I just follow up and ask, you know, when you think about when you think about your grandmother, we will never have the opportunity to know if your grandmother would have consented to these cells being taken, because nobody ever asked her. And,
right,
you know, for the critics who would say, well, but like, look at all of these great medical achievements and, you know, technically, legally, they had the right. I look at these stories and I think about the Tuskegee experiment. I think about Henrietta Lacks, and I think about a history of work being done in the medical field that for too long didn't ask for consent, didn't look to be honest or open and communicate transparently, especially with people of color. To you, is that at the core of the injustice that, you know, that your grandmother never had the opportunity to consent, that we can't speak for her now, but when you do this kind of work and you're not being forthcoming and you're not telling people what you're using certain samples for and you're treating people as sort of an opportunity just to be objects and experiments as opposed to consenting adults, that unfortunately is the history of this country for far too long. Is that what you see as the greatest injustice, or is there something else attached to it?
Absolutely. I think it was just a more of a lack of communication, more, like you say, transparency, being honest, being truthful. If it was asked, if my grandmother, I'm quite sure she would have, because from what we understand, our grandmother hospitality was there, and whatever she could do to help someone, she would do it. So I'm quite sure if she known that her cells would have helped in the way it's helping, I'm quite sure she would have said, okay, yeah, that's fine, just ask me. But for you to treat my family the way you have and forfeited certain information, I don't think that she would, approve of how things have turned out after the taking of her cells without the family's knowledge or without her knowledge or consent.
This is also a family that, you know, the family, as I understand, is not a wealthy family. This is not a family, that probably couldn't have stood to benefit from at least some compensation or support. And from what I have read, that has never come. Is that wrong?
No, that is not wrong. It's not wrong at all. We definitely see that other folks, other people are benefiting off of our grandmother, off our descendants' cells, and yet the family has not seen any type of revenue. I mean, even if they were to give Henrietta's children some type of medical, I mean, some type of universal medical insurance as a token of, okay, thank you, this is for what your mother has done mm-hmm. for the entire world. I mean, it's not just a specific group, but it's the entire world that she has done. And for our family to continue to speak about, you know, the family has not been compensated, the family has not been compensated or benefited from these healer cells, it's kind of heartbreaking. And you're right. We're not well off. We're not struggling, but we would like to see some type of revenue being generated to the family. You got people, pharmaceutical companies, medical institutions that are benefiting. Why can't the family benefit it? I mean, it's, to me, and I'm speaking for myself and not for the entire family, because I'm quite sure you got a large family and they have, you know, different opinions, but the source is Henrietta. And without her, to me, I don't think these medical breakthroughs would have happened as fast as they have. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, the polio vaccine, the HPV vaccine, studying cancer treatments, and having in vitro fertilization, allowing couples to conceive a child. I mean, just imagine, you cannot conceive a child. Henrietta helped with in vitro fertilization, so now you can have a family. Cancer treatment, people's lives are being prolonged or their cancer is in remission. You have these cells that went up into space, from my understanding, went up into space just to see how the human body responds in zero gravity. I mean, just these tiny cells from this African-American woman of 31 died, left five children and a husband. And these, I mean, billions of dollars have been made off of these cells.
Yeah, that's true. Is there a single achievement? I mean, I was going to ask if you're most proud of any of the achievements, but I guess I will ask you, when you think about those medical achievements, what is the first emotion that comes to mind? Are you proud first and foremost, or do you feel some resentment?
Oh, no, absolutely. And I'm speaking definitely for the entire family. We are definitely proud mm-hmm. that these healer cells are making tremendous medical breakthroughs. And for us to actually be a part of that legacy, I mean, it's just, you're lost for words. I mean, her cells are continuing to help to advance science. From our, you know, we know that it's helping with the COVID-19. We are partnering with the World Health Organization, trying to you know, eliminate cervical cancer. So I mean, there's no resentment. There's definitely no resentment there.
Okay,
we're definitely proud that her cells continue to do good work.
Absolutely, Jerry. When COVID vaccines are broadly available to the population, do you plan to get vaccinated?
That's something I'm kind of on the fence with the vaccine, with being vaccinated. It's all.
Okay. Can you take me through a little bit of the mindset about why you're on the fence?
Why I'm on the fence is it seems like things are moving super fast with this vaccine. Once they iron out the kinks, I'm quite sure that I would change my mind and will get the vaccine. But right now, I think things are too new. And I have to get more information, because I think if they they talking about the vaccine, but I think more information needs to be available for people to understand the vaccine.
Okay.
And how it works, who needs to get it, what are the pros and the cons. with a vaccine.
Sure. And I will mention for listeners, 1 week from tonight, WXXI News is hosting a live televised forum. We're going to have some of the top medical researchers in our community, and these are some of the best medical researchers in the country, talking about what we do know about these vaccines and what the schedule is, and every question you might have, we're going to try to answer. That's on WXXI-TV, 8 p.m. a week from tonight, and we're going to talk about some of the things Jerry's talking about. But interestingly, Jerry, your first reservation is just making sure that you understand, okay, this happened very quickly. Can we feel? Can I feel good about the fact that it happened this quickly? Can I feel good about the fact that it's safe? And they'll address that a week from tonight.
I
think researchers will tell you that the answer is yes. But but I think your grandmother's story, coupled with stories like the Tuskegee experiment, have been very, very harmful for the trust that the African-American community has for medical science in general. And can you just tell me a little bit about what you think it will take the medical science community to break down the barriers or maybe some of the walls of mistrust that Black Americans have because of stories like Henrietta Lacks, because of stories like Tuskegee, in which they might say, okay, you got a vaccine, I don't want it. What's it going to take to change that mindset?
Oh, I think it's more of communication for communities and people of color to understand, you know, the importance of the vaccine. Speak about the vaccine. And like you said, speak about the vaccine. Have different seminars, forums, virtual events, speaking about the vaccines. And this, to me, I don't think it's just solely a mistrust because of like the Tuskegee or Henrietta Lacks. It's a combination of the mistrust as well as the medical institution itself. It's not equal for African Americans in this country. It's like it depends on your insurance and how you would be treated if you were to go into a medical institution. Let's say if you have a mediocre insurance, that's what type of care you would get, a mediocre care. If you have the top notch, you're going to get top notch care. I think the treatment, the care should be equal to all people, no matter what color your race. I mean, no matter your race or your socioeconomic status, it should be equal. And to me, that's what I think it is. It's more so of a just distrust with the medical institution as well as, okay, how are they faring to the African American communities or the brown community when it comes to our care?
Yeah, fine, fair enough. Let me get a phone call from Rich in Rochester, who's been listening to Jerry Lacks, who is the granddaughter of Henrietta Lacks. Go ahead, Rich.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good.
First, I have to say that I was one of the very few. It seems like I'm one of the very few people who knew about her when I was a kid, and that's 45 years ago. I read about her story. Mm-hmm. I found it an amazing story. I found it sad, but I just have to thank your family for what they've done for us. The whole world should thank your family. The whole world owes your family a level of gratitude that I don't think people even begin to understand. I think part of our problem is our communication of the history of all these things, even from the Tuskegee. Like many people in the Black community believe that syphilis was given to Black men, but that's not the case. And not that it makes it any better, but the history has to be told also. I think within the Black community and within all communities, there has to be better education of what the vaccine is. You can argue the vaccine is the greatest medical advancement in history of mankind. It changed everything. And I don't think people understand that level. Also, with that, to what you were saying about how Blacks are treated, by doctors. It's not only about insurance. As a black man, it's known that they're a little bit more cavalier in how they look at me as a patient. That has to be dealt with. Also, and there has to be some way of coming to terms with that within our medical community. And the medical community doesn't seem to want to accept that. Mm-hmm. Also, I think with that education, and also within the black community, we have to understand. We have to learn to understand what vaccines mean and how important it is. So there's education and communications that have to be done mm-hmm. on both sides. There has to be efforts by both sides. I think with just in the misinformation is horrible, because they make mm-hmm. some of these stories. As bad as what happened to your relative was, the true story is not told. You know what I mean? And that's part of the sad part too.
Rich, are you gonna get a COVID vaccine, Rich?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
I'm not even thinking about it. But that's because because of who I am, I spent time understanding what vaccines were years ago, mm-hmm. and it's probably the safest treatment there is in the medical community. People don't realize how safe they are. Overall, vaccines have been one of the safest things we've ever done.
Well,
with some of the horror stories we've heard, if you look at the numbers of people who have taken vaccines, and there have been billions mm-hmm. given mm-hmm. over the last 50 years, versus the negative effects, you can argue it's one of the safest things we've ever done. Well, they're getting safer.
Yeah, and let me just jump in here, Rich, first of all, and say, as always, thank you for the phone call. Regarding Rich's last point, I mean, Henrietta Lacks and her legacy is tied to things like the polio vaccine and so many other mm-hmm. Innovations that have saved countless lives, to Rich's point. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just want to, in a moment, I'm going to let Jerry Lacks go, because I want to focus on some of the other black women who are going to be honored by the National Women's Hall of Fame. But Jerry, let me just close by saying I will echo Rich's point. I think the world owes Henrietta Lacks and your family a debt of gratitude. I just want to ask you one more question. I mean, do you feel that as time has passed, the world has come to know your family and your grandmother maybe more fully now, with the book, the movie, et cetera?
I know. But more work needs to be done, because a lot of people still don't know her story. But for the last, let me see, the story was out there. It was out there in different magazines like the Jet, Reader's Digest, Ebony Magazine, several other magazines. And then you had the documentary of BBC, The Conspiracy of Cells, I mean, The Way of All Flesh, and you had a book that came out, The Conspiracy of Cells. So when Rebecca's book came out, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, it just amplified Henrietta's story. Then when the movie came out that was produced by Oprah, that was another platform for her story to be amplified. So more work needs to be done, and that's why our family is going to continue to tell her story, continue to educate people about her story, and talk about, you know, social justice, talk about health disparity, talk about literacy when it comes to medical, because just like Richard said, you know, you have to be educated so you can know these things, so you can make a conscious decision. He just stated, you know, vaccines are getting safer. And it's just, I think if you educate yourself, you know, you're willing to move forward, but you just have to know in order for, you don't want to make a blind decision on something that you don't know. And you just reading, okay, this person said it's great, but no, you need to know for yourself, get information, educate yourself.
Jerry, I'm honored I'm just going to say I'm honored at the time. You are so generous in one day to turn around and say, yep, I'll hop on the phone and tell Henrietta's story. I'll call Rochester, New York. Thank you for doing it. Thank you so much. And once again, congratulations to your family on the honor for Henrietta Lacks with the Women's Hall of Fame.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a great one. Okay.
That is Jeri Lacks, the granddaughter of Henrietta Lacks, one of six black women who are being honored posthumously by the National Women's Hall of Fame. And briefly, before we kind of run down the rest of the list here, Lee in Fairport sent a note on medicine, said Dr. Rebecca Lee Crumpler was the first black woman to earn a medical degree in the United States. Is there a reason the National Women's Hall of Fame has not honored Dr. Rebecca Lee Crumpler yet? Just reading a little bit more, that's an accurate bit of history. So might that be in the offing in the future, Natalie Redd?
Absolutely. In fact, actually, something that we really want folks who are interested to know is that we are actively seeking out nominations. The public is actually the only place where we get our nominations at the National Women's Hall of Fame. If you go to our website, once again, it's womenofthehall.org, you can submit a nomination. So Dr. Lee Crumpler sounds like an amazing candidate for a National Women's Hall of Fame inductee. So please nominate them. That's something I really actually wanted to stress here, is that with this virtual induction series, we're going to continue it. It is a series, and we're going to continue hosting more of these virtual inductions to try to induct other diverse groups of women who deserve recognition or have maybe been overlooked throughout history. So please, please, please nominate.
And let me also say that Jeri Lacks raised just some of her early questions about a vaccine are, wow, this happened fast. We know this happened fast. This happened as a vaccine faster than any vaccine's ever been created. One of the things the researchers will talk about next week is that this is a new technology to create this vaccine. And 10 months ago, they didn't know if it would work. It was an idea that they had good confidence in, but they had never done it before in practice. And what they have found out is that it does. mRNA is different than the platforms for vaccines that have been made in the past that have taken longer. So Jeri's point and question is a good one, and the researchers will be happy to talk about that, because essentially this was an educated guess that this could work, and we are all fortunate as humanity to find out that it does. And in the future, we might see a lot more of mRNA, which is going to be a faster platform to achieve vaccines. All right, so going down the list of more black women who are going to be posthumously honored by the National Women's Hall of Fame. If you're going to do 30-second capsules, Natalie, which isn't fair, but that's what we got to do now, Barbara Hillary. Tell me a little bit about Barbara Hillary.
Absolutely. So Barbara Hillary, she was a professional nurse of gerontology, but what she is most well known for is that she was the first black woman to ever travel to both the North and the South Pole, both after the age of 75. And then after she did her expeditions to the pole, she became really active within climate change and became a big climate activist towards the end of her life. So not only did she reach both the North and South Pole and became an activist for social change, but she did this all after having a 55-year-long nursing career.
All right. Barbara Rose Johns Powell.
Absolutely. Barbara Rose Johns Powell was a young civil rights leader and pioneer. At the age of 16, she led a student strike for equal education at her school in Virginia. And eventually, she teamed up with the NAACP and filed Davis versus Prince Edward County, which was the largest and only student-initiated case. And eventually, this case was consolidated into one of the five cases in the U.S. Supreme Court case, Brown v. Board of Education.
Toni Morrison is a name that I think every listener will know, the author who just passed away last year. And I want to play a clip of Toni Morrison talking to the late Ed Bradley from 60 Minutes and CBS News. This is from about 20 years ago. Ed Bradley's question is first here. Let's listen.
Does your writing have a political point of view?
Oh, yeah. The truth I happen to be most interested in has to do with the nature of oppression and how people survive it or don't. It's amazing to me, particularly for African Americans, just amazing that we're not all dead. That's a constant shocker.
I mean, that's powerful just to even think about that idea from Toni Morrison talking to Ed Bradley from CBS News. And so, of course, we know novel essayist, book editor, professor, but why Toni Morrison now, Natalie?
Well, Toni Morrison, somebody who has belonged in the hall for a very long time, part of our virtual induction series is we realize that at the hall, how we've always operated in the past is that our in-person inductions happen on alternate years, and we actually require any living inductee to come to Seneca Falls to attend the induction ceremony. And we limit the number of posthumous inductions. So we've realized that a lot of people have not been able to travel either because of their health or because their schedules are just so busy. And Toni Morrison is one of those people. Her health was not great in the ending years of her life. And so she wasn't able to come out to Seneca Falls. So we're really glad that now we have the opportunity to honor her posthumously since we lost her a few years ago. So her family will be now, and her family as well as all of our inductees' families, will be accepting the award in their honor. So it makes it much easier for families and for our inductees.
Wonderful.
Now that we have the virtual technology.
And the world lost Aretha Franklin 2 years ago. We know that mm-hmm. name and voice. Tell me a little bit about this induction. 30 seconds.
Oh, well, I mean, Aretha Franklin is a name that stands out on her own. We all know her as the Queen of Soul. Her songs, Respect, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. Not only was she an incredible, incredible artist that everybody knows, but she was also a really strong social activist as well. She was involved in the struggle for civil rights and for women's rights. She provided money for civil rights groups, at times covering payroll, performing at benefits, protests. Her music really was the backdrop for the civil rights movement, and that's something that we really want to highlight in her commemoration as well, not just her incredible music and legacy.
Natalie Rudd, Program Coordinator for the National Women's Hall of Fame. If people want to check out tonight's ceremony, 7:30 p.m., it is free. You can do it online, do it virtually. Where do they find it, Natalie?
You go to womenofthehall.org. That is our main website, and you can register for the free event this evening at 7:30.
Our thanks to Allison Parker, biographer of Mary Church Terrell, and Jerry Lacks, granddaughter of Henrietta Lacks. Natalie, thanks for making the time for us.
Oh, thank you, Evan. Have a great day.
And we're going to let Aretha Franklin take us home this hour. More respect for these incredible, trailblazing black women.